I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. The Eagles held their preseason opener in the sweltering heat yesterday in Philadelphia and beat the Indianapolis Colts 36-10. Quarterback Sam Bradford watched from the sidelines as Mark Sanchez, Matt Barkley, and Tim Tebow led the team to victory. The crowd went wild when Tebow took to the field. This is Coach Chip Kelly's third season in Philadelphia. He made some surprising moves off-season, getting rid of some star players and hiring Bradford, who's had two knee surgeries in less than a year, and hasn't played an NFL game in almost 2 years. Well, we want to talk about Kelly's Eagles, his my way or the highway coaching style, and what's ahead for the team. We're also going to check in on Deflategate, as it has become known, and we have two sports people here who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Mike Sielski, sports columnist with the Philadelphia Inquirer. Mike, always a pleasure. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here, Marty. Thanks.
You're welcome. Also with us, Ray Didinger, football analyst with Comcast Sportsnet here in Philadelphia. Ray, always a pleasure as well.
Same here, Marty.
And to you, Mike, what did you see yesterday on the field?
Saw a lot of good things if you're an Eagles fan. You saw Matt Barkley, one of the three quarterbacks who played yesterday, play quite a bit. In all likelihood, probably because the Eagles are shopping him, hoping to trade him. Because I think, as I wrote in today's Inquirer, that Chip Kelly wants Tim Tebow to make this team. And so if you move Barkley out of the way, that clears the road for Tebow to become the number three quarterback and however else Kelly wants to use him.
Why does he want Tim Tebow? Is it because everyone cheered wildly when he went onto the field to give the fans what they want?
That's a separate issue. I think he wants Tebow for a couple reasons. Number one, Kelly likes the idea of a quarterback who can run and move. And if Tebow can do nothing else as a quarterback, he can do that. And as Ray and I were discussing before the show, I think there is a heavy dose of ego when it comes to Kelly's desire to be the guy in the NFL who figured out how to make Tim Tebow a productive quarterback in this league.
So what's the key to that, Ray? Is there a key to making him this, I guess, as productive as he was in college?
Well, he'll never reach that because I don't think he has the requisite passing skills to ever be a winning starting quarterback at this level. He just doesn't throw the ball accurately enough. But he does bring other things to the offense. Mostly it's the ability to run a certain set of plays. The play that he scored the touchdown on yesterday, the read option play, it's something that he ran successfully in college. He can still run it. And it's a big part of what Chip Kelly wants to do here. So I think that to me was the big storyline of yesterday's game, was the battle for the number three spot, so much of a battle as it is. And I think it really comes down to Chip Kelly's decision, and it's really more a matter of choosing philosophies as opposed to players. It's if you want to have your third quarterback be a conventional quarterback who's just going to come in, play the position, run the offense, then Matt Barkley's your guy because he can do that better than Tim Tebow. But if you want that third quarterback to be a guy that expands your playbook and can do different things in given situations, then that's Tim Tebow. And I really think that's what Chip wants to do.
You said it's an ego thing, Mike, which is doing what other coaches haven't been able to do with Tim Tebow?
Well, I think Chip is unconventional anyway. But if you look at the arc of Tebow's career, he started for a while with the Denver Broncos, and then they decided, you know what, we'd rather him not start anymore. We're going to go out and sign Peyton Manning. He gets traded to the New York Jets, really doesn't do a whole lot for them either, and then signs with the New England Patriots for a preseason and gets cut. So I do think there is an element with respect to Chip where he's saying, okay, Rex Ryan, John Fox, and Bill Belichick have all failed to kind of wring sustained success out of this guy. I think I can. And therefore, and as Ray said, because Chip wants to expand the playbook and not do things in a sort of traditional way, right, Tebow does open up that possibility.
Well, as we all know, sports fans, especially football fans in Philadelphia, are tough. Why, Ray, did they go so crazy when Tim Tebow came on the field? Do they like him that much?
It's because he's his personality as much as he's a player at this point. And it surprised me a little bit because, I mean, we all talked about what we called Tebow mania a few years ago, and it really was a national. I mean, it was a network news story. I mean, it wasn't just a sports story. It was a news story. It was this Tim Tebow phenomenon that took place in Denver when he came in, took over the quarterback position, and he went on this run, and
That's
he wins
right.
a playoff game.
Nine
and,
games, I was told, as yeah. My engineer was feeding my head with football
and,
facts this morning.
But winning them in ridiculous, preposterous, Chip Hilton kinds of ways, you know, in the fourth quarter, making plays that nobody thought he could make. I mean, it took on an almost Rocky-like kind of feel to it, and but that was a long time ago, and I kind of thought that, you know, after an unsuccessful stop in New York and then an unsuccessful stop in New England, by the time he came to Philadelphia, that what we knew as Tebow mania was kind of in the past. Well, not really. I mean, at the stadium yesterday, that's all people were talking about, and there were a lot of people there. And I think, you know, what's happened, he's been through some tough times. He's been out of the game. He got knocked down by a lot of critics. He kind of got mocked a little bit. And I think now people are kind of rooting for the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he has kind of become a Rocky figure. People want to see him come back and be successful.
Sort of fits our psychology here, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. Yesterday was the equivalent of him, you know, cracking the couple eggs in the glass and drinking them down and starting his early morning run.
I can
run.
Hear the music.
Yeah,
the soundtrack.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think that's part of it. And Philadelphians love an underdog story, and Tim has become that. And there is, you know, there are also, let's face it, social, cultural, political dynamics at play too, with how he has lived his life, what he's been outspoken about in terms of, you know,
he's very religious.
He is. He's
right?
very religious. The idea of
exactly, religious.
And so he kind of comes down. He's a mile marker, so to speak, in the red blue, you know, political debate in a lot of ways. I don't doubt there are people who root for him simply because of who he is as a person, and I certainly don't doubt, based on my emails, that there are people who root against him for that same reason too.
Well, in fact, you had a piece this morning in the Philadelphia Inquirer sort of giving a shout out to Matt Barkley and not so much for Tim Tebow.
Well, I just wanted to kind of put myself in Barkley's position. Here you are. You played better than this guy yesterday. As Ray mentioned, you are a better conventional quarterback than Tim Tebow is by virtually any measure. And yet, Tebow is the one getting the standing ovation. Tebow is the one who's hearing his name chanted. Tebow is the one who's presumed is going to make this team. And that presumption comes with some evidence behind it. So if you're Matt Barkley, you've got to be looking around and saying, what's going on here? What do I have to do to kind of shake this guy? And it's a familiar situation. I covered Tebow in New York, and you would hear Mark Sanchez kind of express similar things and kind of roll his eyes after a while, because it's just this wave that has ripples that touch everybody.
And Mark Sanchez didn't do so good yesterday, did he, Ray?
No. He had two series and didn't do very well. Didn't throw the ball. There were two plays that were easy touchdowns that he underthrew one and overthrew another. He didn't look you can't judge anything by two series, but he didn't look very good.
No.
But, you know, Matt Barkley is an interesting story. I don't think he's going to make this team. But if you saw what the Indianapolis Colts rolled out there as their backup quarterbacks, I think it sort of speaks to how poor the NFL is in that area. There are a lot of teams that might have one quarterback, but they don't have more. So if Matt Barkley can't play here, I think he demonstrated yesterday that he can play somewhere else.
Oh.
And I think if I'm the Colts, I'd be looking at Matt Barkley now as a possibility. If the Eagles really want to trade him, I think that you might be willing to have that conversation, because he can definitely play in this league. If not here, he can play somewhere.
Why do you think Chip Kelly wanted Sam Bradford to be his quarterback?
I think he feels like he's a better quarterback than what he had before. You know, Sam Bradford was coming out when he came out of the University of Oklahoma as a Heisman Trophy winner, like Tim Tebow, came out of Oklahoma as the first pick in the draft. Everybody agreed he was the best quarterback in that group, and Tebow was actually in that class. Sam has pretty much every skill you could imagine. He's 6 feet four, he's 230 pounds, has a real strong arm, moves. He's not a great runner, but he's a pretty good runner. And he seemed on track to have a great career. But then injuries got in the way. He hurt his shoulders last year at Oklahoma. Then he came in the NFL and had not one but two ACL injuries. But doesn't take away his ability to throw the football. And I think that Chip Kelly looked at, he had 2 years to coach Nick Foles, had a certain measure of success with Nick Foles. But I think Chip just came to the conclusion, you know what, you know, Nick is a good player, and Nick can win you 10 games, and Nick can get you to the playoffs, but I'm here to win a championship.
Yeah,
I think I have a better chance to do that with Sam Bradford than I do with Nick Foles.
What do you think, Mike?
I think that's exactly right, and I think you know, from a Philadelphia fan standpoint, we're always kind of looking to the sky to see if the anvil is going to fall on our heads. And so
about everything.
And so in that regard, you understand the apprehension about the decision to trade Nick Foles for Sam Bradford, because Bradford tore the same ligament in his knee, in his left knee, twice in a 10-month span. So if you're a Philadelphia sports fan, you're saying, why are we getting this guy who can't stay on the field and seems snake bit and all these sorts of things?
And apparently hasn't played an NFL game in almost
two years. Not since 2013. That's right. The flip side of that, if you're Chip, is the upside, the potential for greatness is so much higher with Bradford because of his athleticism and his skill set that if it works out, if he stays healthy, then the sky is the limit. Then we can compete for a championship. And is it worth taking that risk? And he determined it was.
Is Chip Kelly's baseball mind more clear? I mean, is he still kind of a mystery? Or do we have a sense of what he's thinking, right?
Well, one thing I think he's thinking is, and this makes him unique among Eagles coaches that I've covered, and I've covered a bunch of them since 1970, all coaches that I've covered will always say, I don't care what people say, and I don't care what you guys write. And I don't care what the media says. They'll all say that. But the fact is they're all lying. I mean, they all know what's said, and they all care what's said. Chip is the first guy to come along who says that, and I honestly believe it. I honestly think he doesn't care. I mean, he doesn't care what you write about him. He doesn't care what you say about him. He's going to do things his way. And the decision, I mean, there are many decisions, but the quarterback decision, I think, just sort of speaks to that whole thing. The previous regime with Joe Banner and Andy Reid, they were perfectly fine with the 10 wins. I mean, they were perfectly fine with having a team that they felt could get them that close, that year after year, if we just keep this group together and we get enough chances, we get in the mix, we stay in the mix, we get to the postseason, one of these years we're going to break through. They would have never had the daring to take the step that Chip Kelly took. Chip Kelly said, look, this is fine. 10-6, that's what you want to be. That's not what I came here for. I came here to win a championship. I'm moving on. I'm moving on from DeSean Jackson. I'm moving on from LeSean McCoy. You can talk about all the stats that these guys had. All I know is these guys last year didn't get us to the playoffs. I want to win a championship. Yeah. So I think there is a degree of daring and I'm going to do it my way with Kelly that I think is different from all the other coaches I've covered.
And we're almost about to break here. Mike, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think that's 100% accurate. And I think I'm fascinated by this, by this whole idea. I mean, my feeling is if I were a hardcore Eagles fan, my franchise hasn't celebrated an NFL championship in 55 years. If my coach and the people in charge aren't trying to do things differently, then something's wrong because nothing else has worked for a century. Half a century plus, excuse me.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about the Eagles season, the preseason opener yesterday, and they did beat the Indianapolis Colts 36-10. Talking with Ray Didinger, football analyst for Comcast Sportsnet here in Philadelphia, also with Mike Sielski, sports columnist with the Philadelphia Inquirer. Oftentimes during the football season, we bring these two gentlemen together. Lines open for the sports fans in our audience, and that phone number 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about Philadelphia Eagles in this hour of Radio Times with Ray Didinger and Mike Sielski. And we have callers coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Ray made reference to the fact that Chip Kelly got rid of a number of key players over the last couple of months, I guess, in between seasons. And at one point was called a racist for getting rid of some of these key players. How do we figure race into this conversation?
Well, in a couple ways. One, Trey Thomas, who was an offensive lineman with the Eagles and then an assistant coach under Kelly, told a local TV station that a number of black players on the roster felt like there was some racism in the way Kelly operated. And then LeSean McCoy, running back who Kelly traded to the Buffalo Bills, said that Kelly had a tough time dealing. He wanted to get rid of all the good young black players. So it became this sort of thing, this issue. That he can't relate to black players. Another player, Brandon Boykin, a cornerback who was just traded to the Steelers, didn't mention race specifically, but he said that Kelly had a hard time understanding young men of our culture. And then Brandon kind of backtracked on that and said, no, Chip is not a racist or anything like that. So that's kind of the parameters of the discussion, and it's become something that is just kind of hanging there.
Even now?
Even now. I wrote about this last week, actually. I talked to Dr. Harry Edwards, who's a sociologist at California Berkeley, has been involved in athletics for a long time, actually masterminded that gives it a sinister tone, and I don't mean to, but he was the driving force behind the Tommy Smith and John Carlos protest at the 1968 Summer Olympics. And he's worked with Chip in the past. They've had a professional relationship going back 6 years now. And he said, you know, this is ridiculous. Chip is not a racist in any regard. You know, really poo-pooed the whole idea. But it's still there in large part because Chip is something of a mystery to us on the outside. And so and it's such a lightning rod topic that people want to discuss it.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to weigh in on that. But I'm also curious, Ray, why he got rid of some of these really good players.
I think in part it's because Chip uses the term buy-in a lot. He wants players that buy into what he's doing here. And he wants players that think about the team first and themselves second. And I think he felt like in the case of DeSean Jackson, to some degree, the case of LeSean McCoy, that they were wrapped up in their own individual pursuits more than they were about the team. He felt like they weren't fully on board with everything he was trying to get the team to become. And in that case, I'm willing to move on from that. I think that's really what it is. And the way Chip operates, I don't think there's a racial component to this at all. People are going to talk about it now, and people are going to keep referencing his decision to keep Riley Cooper back when the whole Riley Cooper thing happened. I mean,
where he said the N-word on a
caught saying and he's still here, and these other guys have moved on, which is sort of the little cloud that kind of hangs over all of these discussions. You can't really ever separate that. But I think Chip is a guy who's just – I don't think he's ever going to be a buddy with the players. If the player is looking for a coach who's going to put his arm around him, be warm and fuzzy, and be his big brother – this isn't that coach. You know, Chip is a guy that'll walk past you in the hallway and not say hello. If that bothers you, then that's going to bother you, but it has nothing to do with race. That's just the way he does his business.
Do you think, Mike, that he in any way regrets, he meaning Chip Kelly, regrets how he handled the Riley Cooper situation?
Well, he was asked about that not long ago. And while he acknowledged that it's possible that black players on the team might have held that against him and thought he made the wrong decision, he didn't say he regretted it. And with respect to that situation, I think Cooper would do well. Cooper does not like discussing the incident at all. In fact, if you bring it up with him in a public media setting, he will cut you off and walk away and end the session. And to a certain extent, I think he's leaving Kelly out to dry there. I mean, you know, Chip gets asked about it and he deals with it and he says, you know, Riley regrets that every day of his life. Well, then when Riley gets asked about it, he said, yeah, whatever, boom, and he moves on from it. So it doesn't convey regret in a way that might take some heat off his head coach.
Let me get to actually, it looks like Brian from Middletown, Delaware, wants to weigh in on this as well. Brian, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, good morning, Marty. Morning. You know, I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. And it's great to be able to combine my other love of the Philadelphia Eagles with Ray Dittinger, Mike Silsky. Hello, guys.
How are you doing?
Hi, Brian.
Oh, great, great. I was at the game yesterday with my son, had a wonderful time, got caught up in the Tebow mania as well. But regarding that cloud hanging over Chip Kelly, I think, Marty, if you look at it, football is supposed to be a meritocracy. And the thing with Riley Cooper is, I mean, you can sort of look beyond the fact that he said the N-word. But if you look at his performance over the last couple of years, he's not that good. And really, I hope for Chip Kelly's sake, if Riley Cooper doesn't have a good season this upcoming season, he has to move on from him. Because you can't give a look that you're just sort of protecting guys. I mean, football is a bottom line business. You either perform or you're gone. And, you know, that's kind of that's the way it has to be. But I'm loving the conversation.
That's great.
One last question. Ray, what will the team do if Bradford doesn't turn out to be the franchise quarterback? Where do we go?
That's a big question. And Brian, one thing to you. I grew up in Middletown, Delaware, just so you know.
I know. It's a, Hey, Marty, it's a much different place today.
I know. I was there a couple of years ago. I did not recognize the place. Brian, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, I don't know if Brian's talking about what they're going to do with Bradford now or beyond this year if it doesn't work out, because Bradford's in the last year of his contract. So if it doesn't work out, if Sam Bradford gets re-injured, let's say, then and they don't work out a contract extension, then the Eagles are clearly going to move on from him. If he underperforms and is a big disappointment, they'll move on from him as well. That's going to be a very interesting thing to watch over these next few weeks and months, is do the Eagles extend a contract to Sam Bradford beyond this year, or right. are they willing to let him play this out, see what he has to offer, and then try and re-sign him at the end of the season? That decision as to whether a contract extension is worked out during the year is going to be very indicative of where this whole story goes.
But if, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but if Sam Bradford is hurt, Mike, is that Matt Barkley that comes in, or is it Tim Tebow? Or?
No, it's Mark Sanchez.
It's Mark Sanchez, okay.
He's the number two quarterback.
Okay.
And I mean, he came in last year for the second half of the season after Nick Foles was injured at the midpoint of the season. So if something were to happen to Bradford, it would be Sanchez's team again.
And how much, I mean, we read about or hear about how hard Chip Kelly drives his players, I guess, on the field, but also in practice as well. Does that make for injury-prone players?
Well, he insists that what he's trying to do is minimize those sorts of injuries, or at least minimizes as many injuries as he can, kind of the tissue sorts of injuries, you know, hamstring pulls, groin pulls, things of that nature. So they practice very, very fast at a very, very high tempo. He monitors. He keeps – every player has a GPS system attached to himself to monitor hydration, how much sleep are you getting, when are you using the restroom, all that kind of stuff. How much are you eating? Because he really feels like that this can give his team an edge.
Is that still an edge, this up-tempo way of playing football, Ray?
It's different than anything I've ever seen before.
I mean, are there other teams trying to copy this?
Some teams are. Some teams are not to the extent that Chip is. I mean, Chip talks in terms of he uses the term sports science, and he really believes in it. And they implement it to a greater degree than anybody I've seen. But it's a very different. It's very different from what pro football training camps were 10 years ago. I mean, there's very little contact. It used to be pro football training camps. You'd practice twice a day in full gear, and there was contact every session. There was
meaning people would
they're hitting each other. I mean, you know, full 11-on-11, full contact, tackling guys to the ground, individual drills. What they used to call the nutcracker drill, where a running back would run through a little tunnel, and a defender would be waiting at the other end. I mean, full contact. That was how you chose your players. That was how you identified your players. Now, I mean, the game has moved away from that, but Chip has totally moved away from that. They have practices now where it's really almost like flag football. It's a real different way of doing it, but it's all about this high tempo, up tempo kind of thing. And Chip talks about his practices as conditioning as much as they are about execution.
Well, I think, Mike, you had a piece about how Chip Kelly is interested in special forces. I mean, how SEALs train, and perhaps applying some of that to his team here.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake. I think it's an easy jump to make to say that Chip is some kind of benevolent dictator and that all he wants is a group of, you know, 50 to 90 guys on the roster who are going to knuckle under to him. I don't think he wants that. And the evidence suggests that he's using, you know, the Navy SEALs, for instance, and the idea of the kind of person who would become a SEAL, someone who is smart and who understands what the commanding officer wants to do, but can think quickly and act on his own as well. And he's trying to the key then becomes finding those sorts of personalities and athletes and collecting as many of them as possible. So, you know, getting back to what we were discussing earlier about the race component, I mean, that's been an issue is, okay, well, if he gets rid of all the good young black players and he doesn't understand our culture, there is a tone of an Uncle Tomish idea there. I don't think at all that's what he's looking for. I think he's looking for smart, unselfish sort of athletes who are understanding of what he wants and can kind of carry out things on their own.
I mean, it sounds really risky.
It is. I mean, but you know what? And I think Ray would agree with this. Everything in the NFL is risky if you don't necessarily have an elite starting quarterback. You know, getting back to what Ray had mentioned about Andy Reid and Joe Banner and being willing to kind of knock on the door with 10 wins every season. Well, part of the reason they could do that was they drafted Donovan McNabb in Andy Reid's very first draft, and they knew they had their franchise quarterback. So they could say to themselves, we'll get there eventually if we just keep a really good team around him. Chip hasn't had that yet. He may have it with Sam Bradford, but he hasn't had that component.
One of the things that that Chip is different, Chip does put a lot of stock in intelligence. He puts a lot of stock in, for the lack of a better term, character. There's a very, very, very high percentage of guys on this team that are graduates, that have their college degrees. They tend to go, a lot of teams will draft guys that came out as undergrads. The Eagles tend to like guys that are four-year players and have their degrees. A high percentage of these players were captains of their college teams. They tend to go for that. And I was talking to some people who went out to the NFL scouting combine, where the NFL evaluates the kids that are going to come out in the next draft. And everybody has these interview sessions where they set up rooms and they bring the kids in and they interview them. And generally, most teams, when they get these kids in the room and they interview them, they have them go to a blackboard and have them diagramming plays. They ask them questions, quiz them. Okay, in this coverage, what do you do? Boom, 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 boom. It's all X's and O's. I was told that the Eagles did none of that this year, that they brought all of their guys in, and all they did was they sat down and they just talked psychology.
Really?
They talked about, you know, how do you live? Where do you grow up? What were your favorite courses in school? What books do you like to read? What movies do you go see? And the kids, like, who had been through four or five of these other teams, and he's saying, well, you know, don't you want me to? No. We'll get to that sooner or later. We want to know more about you. And so their whole approach to this is more about, it's as much about the person as it is the player.
That's fascinating. Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. Ray Didinger, football analyst for Comcast SportsNet. Mike Sielski, sports columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we are talking about the Eagles, the Philadelphia Eagles. Also talking about its coach, Chip Kelly, now in his third season. A very unusual and I would say rather interesting, intriguing coach here in Philadelphia. And as we all know, sports fans in this city are quite something. Give us a call. I was trying to figure out what word would I use there.
Well done.
I think we'll trademark that.
1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. A question from Kevin, our engineer here. Can they talk about some of the Eagles' lingering needs? Where is there a lack of depth? Lingering needs with this team as you see it?
Well, I think there's a concern about the offensive line, certainly. They let Evan Mathis, who had been an elite guard, one of the interior linemen, they let him go in part because he wanted a new contract and they were not willing to give him one. So are there concerns there about depth along the line? You have two spots, both guard positions that there's some questions there. You have a left tackle in Jason Peters, who has been a Hall of Fame caliber player, but is, I believe, 33 years old, 34 years old. So there's concern that he's getting up there age-wise and may not be at the level he has been. So that's the one position area, I think, that comes to mind.
How about for you, Ray?
Yeah, thin on the offensive line right now. I mean, you've got two tackles that you're pretty sure of, your center. But you don't really know who your guards are right now. The guys they've got playing there right now are really just kind of marginal, more backup kinds of players than quality starters. And behind them, you have next to nothing.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the offensive line is an area where I think they are really short right now. And if they have a couple injuries there, they could really be in trouble. The guy who could emerge as a real factor, and he played a lot against the Colts and actually played pretty well, was a guy named John Moffitt, who's a guy who was drafted, was a good player at the University of Wisconsin, drafted by Seattle, actually was a starter in Seattle for a couple of years, had some problems off the field, left the game last year, decided this year he wanted to come back and play again. Chip Kelly knew him because he's from Connecticut. He's from up that way. Chip gave him an opportunity. He came to camp, and he's looked pretty good. And yesterday he played a lot and played pretty well. My feeling is I think he's going to wind up winning one of those jobs. And at the way they are right now, I think they kind of need him to do that.
Mike, you had a really nice story about a young player, Rashid Bailey, actually grew up here in Philadelphia, went to Delaware Valley College. I think I have the name right.
Yes. Delaware Valley University. Yeah.
Out near Doylestown, just outside of Philadelphia. It's one of those stories where, you know, you just want to get behind somebody like this.
Yeah. I mean, he played at Roxborough High School. And Delaware Valley is a Division III school, so you don't often see prospective NFL players come out of that level of football. But the Eagles signed him after the draft. He had not been drafted, came out of the projects. you know, in the city and
lost a good friend.
Lost a good friend. Had his best friend murdered while he was at Roxborough, and has really opened some eyes during training camp and during these mini camp sessions. He made a terrific catch yesterday in the game, and there's a chance that he could earn a spot on this team, both as a wide receiver and as a special teams player. He's a big kid. Chip raves about the way he can catch the ball every single time it's thrown to him, which is, you know, fairly important if you want to be a receiver in the NFL is catching the football.
Exactly. Let me get Tony from South Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Tony. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Go ahead, Tony.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi. Trying to get off speakerphone. Sorry. I come from I moved into town about 20, 25 years ago, and I keep noticing every single year about the third game, if they've won a couple games, the press starts hinting at the Super Bowl. And the fans just fall into this delusion almost every year that they're going to go to the Super Bowl, that Ray Rhodes is going to save us, that Rich Kotite is a genius. I mean, it's just laughable.
No, I don't think anyone ever went quite that far.
Really? I mean, and the press is part of this. It's every single year. And I come from an area where they've won a couple Super Bowls, and they don't even talk like this.
Ah.
Well, you know, on the other side of the state, let's say.
We know where you're from there, Tony.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, well, I'll take my comments and hatred that you're going to throw at me off the air.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tony, only because we have to take a very short break, so you're going to have to wait for about 90 seconds before you hear some of that hatred, although I'm looking at my two guests, I don't think they're going to hit you too hard. We are going to take a very short break, and then we'll be talking about whether the press is too rah-rah about the Super Bowl here in Philadelphia. Again, Ray Dittinger and Mike Sielski are guests in this hour of Radio Times. You can call us, as Tony did, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499, talking about the Eagles, talking about the NFL, and we will be talking a bit about Deflategate as well. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about football, the Eagles, with Mike Sielski and Ray Dittinger, and about the fact that, yes, this year they're going to go. They're going to make it to the Super Bowl. Ray, this is what our caller was complaining about.
I've been involved in the media and sports media in this town for a long time, and I've never been called a cheerleader before, and I think most people, the perception of the Philadelphia sports media is if anything, it's the opposite of being a cheerleader.
That's my takeaway.
That's a pretty tough media town. I think what the caller is referencing, for, he's obviously saying opposite side of the state. He's from Pittsburgh.
Yes.
It's easy to talk about Super Bowls in Pittsburgh when you won six of them. Okay. I think what's reflected here is a feeling in many years that maybe this can be the year. I think this city and this fan base live on the hope that this is going to be the year. Because I've often said this, and I really defend the Philadelphia fans. I admire their loyalty. I certainly admire their passion. But you look around the NFC East, the division that they're in, they're their most bitter rivals. New York Giants have won four Super Bowls. The Washington Redskins have won three Super Bowls. The Dallas Cowboys have won five Super Bowls. The only team in this division with an empty trophy case is this team.
Ouch.
So when people say that the Philadelphia fans are impatient, if anything, they're the opposite of impatient.
They've been
waiting, as Mike said when we started the show, it's been 55 years since this team won an NFL championship. I mean, they've never won a Super Bowl. So I think what this caller is referencing is not so much that anybody in the media is leading cheers. I think what you hear is a city that's just dying for a team that's finally going to take them there.
Yeah. Mike, you want to weigh in on that
No, I think, you know, kind of broadening the whole question, I do think that there's kind of a – sports is so much a part of Philadelphia's kind of cultural DNA. It's – you know, we're stuck between the cultural capital of the world and the financial capital of the world in New York and the political capital of the world in Washington, D.C. And we have sports, and it kind of feeds what I've referred to as almost like an inferiority complex that we have just, you know, culturally. And so our outlet is our sports teams, the four major teams and the Eagles in particular. So the fact that the Eagles haven't won a Super Bowl and have only appeared in two – It's just this angst. It's it's this feeling of, you know, there's going to be this great expulsion of energy when, if it finally happens.
Yeah, and the other thing is, it isn't as if over these years that they have been without a chance. It's not like they have been a 4-12 team every year that we've been building up false hope. The fact is, they've been really close for a long time. I mean, they went to 4 championship games with Andy Reid. I mean, they were really close a number of those years. So it could, any one of those years could have been the year, but it hasn't yet.
So they aren't or weren't the 76ers, as you know.
No.
Just checking.
Nothing like that. Not often. They were for a while, but not lately.
What about concussions? I mean, this has been so much a part of professional football, and you know, you hear these heartbreaking cases of players that have just had their brains, it seems, scrambled as a result of this game. Are they going to be more careful, do you think? I mean, is there pressure, Mike, to be more careful?
I think the more we learn about this, that's what's going to change the dynamic. We're learning more and more about CTE and these diseases and the damage that are associated and can be associated with playing football. And what comes out of that is really a question of free will. Are you willing to take the risk of playing football now that you might suffer from these sorts of things later in life, or even early in your life if you happen to be susceptible in some way? So I do think that there's going to come a point where prospective football players are going to know this is what is possible if you play this game. And in some ways, we're already there. Yeah. And so the question then becomes, do you accept this risk or do you not? What the league is still grappling with is how much of this devastation and knowledge they already had and didn't tell anybody. And so you had guys thinking, well, it's one thing to get my leg broken or my shoulder separated and maybe get a little fuzzy in my head. It's another thing to have degenerative brain disease born out of my career playing football.
You want to add to that, Ray?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot more knowledge out there. I mean, people have a much better idea of what they're dealing with. I think the fact that the league has now introduced baseline testing for all the players is really significant. It used to be you didn't have any basis of comparison. If a guy got hit in the head and he came off the field, I mean, literally the trainer would hold up a couple of fingers, say how many fingers. If he said the right number, then you send him back in the game. If he said the wrong number, you might have sent him back in the game. But now you can't do that. I mean, there's a lot of – it's not just team doctors now. A lot of these guys have to go through independent neurologists and be cleared by independent neurologists before they're allowed to return to action. And that's a big step forward. I don't know if you're going to eliminate it all, because you're talking about – a high contact, high speed sport that involves men
big
of
guys.
250, 260 pounds. Those collisions are major collisions. So you're always going to have some of this, but there has to be a greater awareness and a greater sense of responsibility on the part of the teams to know where you draw the line.
And more or stricter rules, I guess, sort of much you can rough the kicker, or, you know.
Well, they're trying to do that. And in some ways, kind of the high tech veneer of the game doesn't help. I mean, the padding is harder. The players are bigger and faster. The collisions are more violent. You almost hear the argument that, well, back when they were playing leather helmets and really thin pads, you couldn't inflict the damage that guys can inflict on each other now, because they're basically armored and they're traveling at the speed of slow-moving automobiles.
I do want to ask a couple of questions about Deflategate. I know that Tom Brady of the Patriots was in federal court. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a case that's being fought in our court system, having to do with footballs that were slightly underinflated. What do you make of all this, Ray?
Well, I think it's just ridiculous that this is still going on 8 months, 8 months later, that they couldn't have worked this out. And I think that's kind of what you're hearing coming out of the courtroom, is that Judge Berman, who's hearing the case up there, has said many times to both sides, both the league and Tom Brady, look, this really doesn't belong in front of me. You guys are adults. They're talking about deflated footballs, for God's sake. Can't you guys settle this on your own? Don't make me settle this. Now, September the 4th is they've made the drop dead date. Yeah. If they haven't worked this out between the sides.
Because Tom Brady's suspended for 4 games, right?
Yes. And so they said September the 4th, the judge has said, if you guys haven't resolved this, okay, I'm going to settle it. And I'm not going to, there's going to be no compromise. I'm going to go either or. So do you prepare to live with that? If not, work it out among yourselves. I agree with him. It's ridiculous we've dragged this thing out for 8 months, but it's clear at this point, and Mike and I were talking about this before the show, that Tom Brady's not backing down.
No, clearly.
I mean, Tom Brady wants vindication here. And let's face it, the league and Roger Goodell have been a very vulnerable target in the courts for many years.
Mike?
With good reason. I can't wrap my mind around the idea that this is a hill that the league wants to die on, so to speak. We're talking about the functional equivalent of a baseball pitcher scuffing the ball. And in those situations in Major League Baseball, the average suspension a pitcher gets for doctoring the baseball is 10 games out of a 162-game season. So the idea on its face that the league would suspend Tom Brady for 4 games for this offense, if there were a calculated decision on his and the Patriots' part to manipulate these footballs, that's overreach right there. Let alone
the punishment doesn't fit
the punishment does not fit the crime if there was a crime. Right. And you know, you also have the issue of Goodell having been established as judge, jury, district attorney in this whole sort of, you know, situation where he hands down the punishment, you appeal the punishment, and the appellate judge is Roger Goodell. So, you know, I have a lot of issues with this whole thing from top to bottom, particularly from the league side of handling it. And never mind the fact that, as you mentioned, we're talking about deflated footballs here.
And there's no guarantee with a deflated football that you're going to get a better win.
The game that is in question here was the AFC Championship game between the Patriots and the Colts, a game that the Patriots won 45-10. They could have played with a beach ball, and the Patriots would have won that day. So it's silly on a lot of different levels.
The one thing that needs to be pointed out, however, is that the union, the Players Association, is partly responsible
yes.
for this because they've created this now.
They want to fight.
Well,
it sounds like.
Well, beyond that, though.
But see, when they negotiated the last collective bargaining agreement, the league agreed to put all this power in the hands of the commissioner. It didn't have to be this way. The players and the union allowed this situation to exist. Now, they don't like it the way it's played out, but ultimately you got to say, hey, fellas, this is the situation you created. Now you got to live with it.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Ray Didinger, football analyst for Comcast Sportsnet. Also with us, Mike Sielski, sports columnist with the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we are talking about the Eagles. We're talking about Deflategate, concussions, football. And to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Also, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. In fact, a tweet from Joe, one good thing for Eagles fans this year, there'll be no problem assigning the blame or the praise. And I guess talking about Chip Kelly, Mike, basically saying, this is the team, this is how we're going to do it.
This is Chip Kelly unplugged. Basically, when the Eagles hired Kelly, he had 2 years where he basically tried to take Andy Reid's players, guys who had, you know, gone 8-8 in 2011 and 4-12 in 2012, and see what he could do with them. And they won 10 games and made the playoffs the first year, and won 10 games and didn't make the playoffs the second year. And now he's saying, okay, he won a power struggle with Howie Roseman, who had been the general manager, and now Chip has the final say in all personnel matters. He's got his people in there, assuming he has people and it's not just him. And so we're going to see exactly what Chip Kelly thinks and how it works when it's all on him. And your emailer is right. The Eagles are either going to sink or swim on the shoulders and mind of Chip Kelly.
And how about for Bill Davis, the defensive coordinator? Is this a make or break year for him?
I think it's a big year for all of these guys. I've had some people say, well, you know, they could take a step back this year and build. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think you can do that. I think this team has to go to the playoffs and make some noise. And largely because this is really on Chip now. And that's what makes this team so fascinating. And that's what makes this season so fascinating. I mean, the Eagles are going to have more primetime exposure than almost any team in the league this year. I mean, they're going to be on primetime football as much as the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Why is that?
Because they're such a fascinating story. And there's no assurance they're going to be great. No one really knows that. But everybody knows the dramatic moves that Kelly has made. Chip Kelly is one of the biggest stories in the NFL this year, win or lose, because of some of the moves that he's made. And the fact that the networks have chosen to make this one of the marquee teams in the league, coming off a year when you didn't even make the playoffs, is an indication that the Chip Kelly right now is a guy that everybody, not just in Philadelphia, but everybody across the NFL is talking about.
I mean, whether Chip Kelly is this genius or not, Mike?
Yeah, that's basically it, because he does things and he has done and promises to do things so differently from the way things traditionally have been done in the league. He's changed the practice schedule. He changes the way his teams play in terms of how quickly they run an offense. And, you know, I personally think one of the things he wants to do this season is kind of put the emphasis in a way back on running the football. One of the big trends in the NFL has been this idea that you can put up a lot of points really only by throwing the football. You have to have a, you know, an unbelievable quarterback and throw the ball a lot. Well, he's built a team where the strength of it offensively is at a position that, you know, has been pretty fungible over time, which is the running back position. It wasn't good enough just to have one guy in LeSean McCoy. He's now got three presumably productive guys in DeMarco Murray, Darren Sproles, and Ryan Matthews.
We have a comment from Carly. Says, I was raised as a Dallas fan outside of Philadelphia. I grew up hating the Eagles as I was raised. I work in the city now and have found the fans really do believe they're going to the Super Bowl. It's quite a culture. I almost love to hate them. I'd rather see them lose the Super Bowl than see Dallas win it.
If she's a Cowboys fan, this one thing is certain: they love to hate her back.
Exactly. So who should the Eagles be worried about as they, you know, as they team up against Dallas or others?
Well, right? in their division. I think that Dallas is the one team that they'd be most concerned about. Dallas is the defending champion. They are strong in an area where the Eagles are a little weak, which is on the offensive line. Romo's coming off a great year. But the big thing between the two teams is the Eagles have taken away DeMarco Murray, who was probably the MVP of the Cowboys last year. He's now an Eagle. Without DeMarco Murray, the Cowboys aren't going to be able to run the ball as effectively as they did last year, and that changes everything in their equation. So if you're talking about who do the Eagles have to get past first, well, you got to win your division first. And winning the division here, I don't think it's the Giants, and I don't think it's the Redskins. It's the Cowboys.
Yeah, Cowboys?
Yeah, I would agree. Within the NFC East, within the division, the Cowboys are the prospective roadblock. Within the NFC, the conference as a whole, you still have to look at the Seattle Seahawks, who have gone to the Super Bowl each of the last 2 years. You have to look at the Green Bay Packers, who to me have the league's best quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. And usually there's a team or two that kind of comes out of nowhere, so to speak. You might look at the Atlanta Falcons. They have a new head coach. They have a very productive quarterback, a local kid named Matt Ryan, who's been good for a long time. So it's not going to be easy by any stretch. And, you know, getting back to what we were discussing, though, Ray mentioned about the networks being interested. It's indicative of what people around the league think the Eagles could be, that they open their season on Monday Night Football in Atlanta against the Falcons, and that they're playing on Thanksgiving for the second year in a row, this time against the Detroit Lions. There are no small amount of expectations on this team.
And who's up next week? Is it Saturday?
Saturday night.
Against the Baltimore Ravens.
All right. And any predictions here?
That Sam Bradford will probably play close to the first half, if not all the first half. And Eagles
fingers
fans
crossed.
Will be crossing their fingers and holding their breath that he emerges unscathed.
For you, Ray?
Same thing. I mean, that's, you know, Chip said that he was going to hold Bradford out. Disappointed a lot of fans who went out there to see him on Sunday, but Chip said he's going to play Saturday, and you're right. Every time Sam Bradford drops back to pass and every time he hits the ground, everybody's going to be holding their breath. But I will say this, having gone out to see him practice, and Mike's been out there watching practice, he's looked very good in practice, and he's gotten better by the day. Well, he has a strong arm. I mean, he has a live arm. So if he can stay on the field and he can stay healthy, this offense has a chance to be pretty dynamic.
Well, always fun to talk to the two of you about Eagles, the Philadelphia Eagles. Ray Dinger, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Marty.
And he's a football analyst for Comcast Sportsnet. Mike Sielski, thank you very much as well.
Always appreciate it, Marty. Thanks.
Well, no, it's our pleasure as well. And he's sports columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And a special thanks to Emily Bryant and Kevin Griffin for stuffing my head full of football information this morning. Kevin is bowing down to our two guests here. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Claire Moran is our intern this summer. As I said, Kevin Griffin, our engineer. The show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.